Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Thanks to National Alliance Chairman Will Williams and Nathan D'Amigo, I have before me a copy of a bill which is in the process of making its way through the Tennessee legislature. The bill, HB 2100, has not yet been signed, as far as I can tell, but has crossed all the other legislative hurdles. It aims to fight back against the debanking movement among banks and other Jewish-dominated financial institutions that I talked about on last week's American Dissident Voices program. A movement to deny financial services to individuals and groups who oppose the anti-white, anti-family, anti-normal sexuality agendas being pushed by the Jewish power structure. The National Alliance, the sponsor of this program, and our community's Cosmotheist Church have been victims of this campaign on numerous occasions. We had 6 bank accounts closed on us and had online usury card processor accounts closed so many times I've lost track of the exact number. I quit counting at 20. All in an effort to keep us from doing the ordinary business transactions that other membership organizations and churches do every day, so long as they never criticize Jews or the Jews' anti-white, multiracialist agenda. The Jewish power structure, through their mouthpieces, the ADL, and a number of Soros front groups with high-sounding names, including the words open and democracy and the like, have been for years now, and with increasing frequency, sending quote-unquote reports and quote-unquote studies and other missives suggesting and prodding such financial institutions to deny services to white racists and anti-Semites and extremists and others the Jewish groups define as haters. You'd think that these days, with the Jewish state and its U.S. enablers in Washington murdering thousands of innocent and mostly non-white people every single week in Palestine, that such letters from the ADL thugs and Soros' goons would be met with derisive laughter at the preposterous suggestion that the bloody-handed Jewish establishment has the right to call anyone else a hater. But the executives at financial institutions worldwide, and especially in the U.S., are not a typical audience. Back in 2018, I reported on this program. Of the 51 senior executives of the major Wall Street banks, trade exchanges, and regulatory agencies, 37 are Jews or have Jewish spouses. This is a numerical representation of 72%. Jews are approximately 2% of the U.S. population. Therefore, Jews are overrepresented among the senior executives of the major Wall Street banks, trade exchanges, and regulatory agencies by a factor of 36 times or 3,600%. Of the 40 senior executives of the major Wall Street mutual funds, private equity funds, hedge funds, and brokerages, 26 are Jews or have Jewish spouses. This is a numerical representation of 65%. Jews, as I said, are approximately 2% of the U.S. population. Therefore, Jews are overrepresented among the senior executives of the major Wall Street mutual funds, private equity funds, hedge funds, and brokerages by a factor of 32.5 times or 3,250%. So, when the ADL, or one of the dozens of Soros so-called NGOs, writes to the heads of banks, credit card firms, and the like, around 70% of those they're writing to are Jews, who are easily persuaded by these supposed leaders of the Jewish community and protectors of Jews that they need to cut off the bank accounts and credit and debit card transaction abilities of haters. Read racially conscious whites. The other 30%, non-Jews in decision-making positions, are well aware that their jobs depend on Jewish favor and are easily persuaded to fall in line. And even if nearly all the executives at their particular rural backwater bank, there still are a few that haven't been bought up yet, are non-Jews, they know well that their company is totally at the mercy of the larger Jew-controlled financial system of which they are a part. They, too, are a very special kind of audience for letters from Soros NGOs and the ADL. If the executives at financial institutions were ethnically and racially representative of the U.S. population, which they are not by 100 miles, then it would be Jewish groups being labeled as haters, fomenters of genocide, and undesirable customers. As it is, though, it is white race thinkers who are getting debanked. And also, pathetically philo-Semitic conservatives are getting debanked too. These, though they may sincerely love Jews and support Israel, nevertheless find themselves at odds with some part of the Jews' agenda, say the promotion of sexual perversion or transsexual sex mutilation of children or the killing of healthy children in the womb, things like that. With typical Jewish hysteria and overreach, these mostly white conservatives are being debanked every bit as much as the National Alliance. So in places like Tennessee, where a very large part of the population is white, and in many areas it is nearly all white and tradition-minded, there is some pushback against the intensifying debanking efforts of the Jews. Hence this bill. Let me quote from it. Quote, "A financial institution shall not deny or cancel its services to a person or otherwise discriminate against a person in making available such services or in the terms or conditions of such services on the basis of 1. The person's political opinions, speech, or affiliations. 2. Except for a financial institution that claims a religious purpose, the person's religious beliefs, religious exercise, or religious affiliations. 3. Any factor, if it is not a quantitative, impartial, and risk-based standard, including any such factor related to the person's business sector. Or 4, the use of a rating, scoring, analysis, tabulation, or action that considers a social credit score based on factors including A, the person's political opinions, speech, or affiliations, B, except for a financial institution that claims a religious purpose, person's religious beliefs, religious exercise, or religious affiliations, C, the person's lawful ownership of a firearm, D, the person's engagement in the lawful manufacture, distribution, sale, or purchase or use of firearms or ammunition, E, the person's engagement in the exploration, production, utilization, transportation, sale, or manufacture of fossil fuel-based energy, timber, mining, or agriculture. F, the person's support of the state or federal government in combating illegal immigration, drug trafficking, or human trafficking. G, the person's engagement with, facilitation of, employment by, support of, business relationship with, representation of, or advocacy for any person described in this subsection, C. Or H, the person's failure to meet, or commit to meet, or expected failure to meet any of the following, as long as such person is in compliance with applicable state or federal law. 1. Environmental standards, including emission standards, benchmarks, requirements, or disclosures. 2. Social governance standards, benchmarks, or requirements, including environmental or social justice. 3. Corporate board or company employment, composition standards, benchmarks, requirements, or disclosures based on race, creed, color, religion, sex, age, or national origin. Or 4. Policies or procedures requiring or encouraging employee participation in social justice programming, including diversity, equity, or inclusion training. Close quote. Now, the Jews are not going to like this bill. It makes it a bit, just a little bit harder for them to push their DIE agenda on us. And despite the fact that the freedom lover and practical man in me can't stand the idea of some 90 IQ bureaucrat deciding things like who should be forced to do business with whom, or what is and what is not a legitimate risk factor in a business he knows nothing about, I am nevertheless glad to see the bill get to the governor's desk, if it does at last. And I hope it becomes law, if it hasn't already, by the time you hear this. As long as the dumbbell bureaucracy exists, we might as well see it used to help good white people instead of hurt them. But I warn you, the 23 Republicans, and it was only Republicans, who sponsored the bill did not write it and sponsor it because they care about the white race. Or if they did, they're damn sure not going to admit it. You can't admit to virtue like that and be elected in this country. They wrote and sponsored it because of the Jews' overreach in including civic nationalist conservatives on the list of haters who ought to be debanked. The conservatives and Republicans have already been making noises about how unfair it was to include themselves alongside truly evil haters like white people who want to continue to exist. If the Jews had strictly limited themselves to debanking white racists and anti-Semites, why the sainted Jesus-loving conservatives would have had no problem at all with that bill. They almost came out and said as much. So, you can be sure that these same conservatives and Republicans, after this bill becomes law, will be first in line to meet with moderate Jewish spokesmen, who will suggest ever so nicely that they amend the law so that white racists and anti-Semites can be debanked, while of course leaving Bible bangers and MAGA folks alone. There would be a bill that every Republican could endorse. There was a time, not so long ago, when we did not need banks to live. Even before I realized that our banks constitute a Jewish scam and a system of modern slavery, I had a desire to live a private life, free of Big Brother-style surveillance. And I saw the banking system as one of the worst offenders in that regard, right up there with the government itself. This was the late 1970s and early 1980s, and I was working for radio station WEAM in Arlington, Virginia. I would take my biweekly paycheck made out to me from WEAM and take it to not my bank, but the bank where the radio station had its bank account. I think it was Arlington Fairfax Savings and Loan. After providing proof that I was indeed the man to whom the check was made out, I would endorse and cash the check, taking the full amount in paper currency. Then I would spend it as I saw fit. Some things, even then, still pretty much required check payments, so I did deposit some, but far from all, in my own bank account. At least when I cashed the check at the issuing bank, I was keeping part of my life private from the bank I was forced to use for certain other purposes. I definitely resented the increasingly near requirement that we all have a bank account. With all the numerous eyes on everything we do with our money that implies. And I somewhat resisted it for as long as I could, even before I was race and Jew aware. Arlington Fairfax managers didn't always like cashing the checks drawn on their bank for a non-account holder. Why would they, when they were a fractional reserve institution, like all of them, always 90% or so short of the cash to match their paper obligations? But there must have been a law, or at least a strong tradition, that they had to cash checks if they were written by their account holders. By 1982, though, Arlington Fairfax had merged with some mega bank or other, and banking regulations had changed. And within a year or so, they started absolutely refusing to cash my paychecks. I soon discovered that I could no longer live my life as a cash customer with most businesses without first passing all my income through a bank which kept detailed records on me. I suppose I should thank those petty tyrants for inspiring my study of the banking system, which led to several major awakenings in my life. I encourage all of you to read more on the banking system on nationalvanguard.org, because knowledge of how it truly works will allow you to understand exactly how we have been enslaved. And without such understanding, we cannot achieve freedom again. One freedom tool I mention from time to time is Bitcoin. Not only has Bitcoin allowed our customers and supporters to transact with us during periods when we and our church had been fully or partially debanked, to the tune of many thousands of dollars, but it is also a new technology which, once it reaches a higher level of adoption, can totally replace the entire Jewish banking and financial system. That's revolutionary and very, very promising. If we do right, there can be a day when we can live our lives completely free of banks and bankers. True, you can't yet run down to the lumber yard and use BTC to get the materials you need to build a house, but we're getting there. You can use it to buy Amazon and other gift cards at a company called BitRefill, and thousands of businesses worldwide now accept it. So some people basically live on it now instead of dollars. And you can buy books from Cosmotheist Books and support the National Alliance with it. One man wrote to us saying, quote, "If you think Bitcoin isn't part of the establishment, then just Google how many Bitcoin wallets have been seized," close quote. That's a common claim, but it isn't really true. Sure, Bitcoin has been seized by the government when it was left on a wallet on an exchange, because the feds can subpoena or otherwise threaten the exchange operators until they give up the account password and funds to the government. But Bitcoin, kept on a hardware wallet, not connected to any exchange, cannot be seized like that. And that is where everyone should keep their BTC. That is how it was intended to be used. It was not intended to be used by keeping your BTC in Sam Bankman-Fried's fraudulent bucket shop or anything remotely like it. It should be obvious that I place little long-term faith in the new Tennessee bill and its sponsors. But I do think it and bills like it can buy us some time. We should use that time to grow our numbers and grow our National Alliance Intentional White Community. Are you helping us to do that?